This is The Drive with Josh Graham Podcast. Tune into The Drive weekday afternoons, 3 to 7 on Sports Hub Triad.
We are packed today. A big night in college basketball. Canes head coach Rod Brind'Amour in 30 minutes. But we start with football, where I've been on record saying this, that the moment Luke Kuechly surprisingly announced his retirement, the Carolina Panthers became a rebuilding team. The decision to move off Greg Olsen in late January, who's now a Seahawk, by the way, was affirmation of that. So I think it's a matter of time before the Carolina Panthers move off of Cam Newton. I think it's going to be via trade sometime before the draft in April. But one thing we haven't discussed much, what's the alternative for Carolina? What are we going to see at quarterback for the 2020 season? And I think there are two realistic quarterback options in free agency this year that are better than what the Panthers would have if they remained with Cam at quarterback. When I say realistic, I'm not talking about Tom Brady. I don't think it's realistic that Tom is going to choose a rebuilding franchise for his final season moving off from the New England Patriots. But I do think it's realistic you land another future Hall of Fame quarterback. I'm talking about Phillip Rivers. Great short-term bridge quarterback. You can get him to a two-year deal whenever you're rebuilding. Whether it's the NBA or the NFL, Major League Baseball, you don't want to be tied down to long-term contracts. Phillip Rivers is one of the few quarterbacks that if you try to sign in this year's cycle, this year in free agency, more quarterbacks available than I can remember in recent memory, he is the one you can get on the shortest deal and still get productivity from. He's 38 years old. But durability is going to be an upgrade from what you've had with Cam Newton. Cam missing the last two games of 2018, playing the second half injured with the shoulder injury, missing all but two games with the foot concern. And 2019, as we all know, Phillip Rivers has played 16 games for 13 consecutive seasons. So you want to throw 38 out there, but we're seeing Drew Brees announcing he's going to return in his 40s. Already mentioned, Tom Brady is still chucking along. So I'm not really that deterred by 38 years old. Also, it gives the Panthers an opportunity to learn what they have with Joe Brady. See, when we talk about learning what you have, it's always the roster that people talk about. Hey, let's see what you have at quarterback. See what this offensive line can do gelling together defensively. Can anybody stand out there? I think the same applies for coaches, especially when it's 30-year-old offensive coordinator Joe Brady. Offensive wonderkind, great at LSU, very well liked in the Saints organization. Michael Thomas got close to him. Drew Brees has always said nice things about Brady as long as he was there. The numbers didn't lie at LSU. LSU was not an offensive power by any means in the SEC. Then Joe Brady arrives, and they're great, breaking records and winning a national title. If Phillip Rivers is the quarterback, we learn if Joe Brady can cut it or not at the NFL level. Give Joe Brady 2 years of Phillip Rivers, you figure out what exactly that's going to be. Also, I think Phillip Rivers might be the best comp to Joe Burrow. Or Joe Burrow, coming out of the draft, it's always going to be, who is this person? I've heard crazy stuff said. Oh, he reminds me of Joe Montana. Oh, he reminds me of Aaron Rodgers. It's always the top quarterback in the sport they compared the number one pick to. But I think it's Rivers. When I see that quick release, it reminds me of Rivers. The accuracy, that was his big drawing point coming out of NC State over 15 years ago. But this is the thing that sticks with me. Swagger. Is there a quarterback in the NFL who's been as good as Rivers has been consistently for over a decade who has the swagger that he has? I don't think so. Talking trash. Not afraid to voice it publicly. Not afraid to be demonstrative at points. That's what Burrow is too. Burrow, he's flashy. He doesn't mind talking to the guys at Barstool Sports and going out there and doing interviews where he says things that get people to react. He's been known to talk a little trash on the field. So I like Burrow. I liken Burrow to Phillip Rivers. So it seems that's a fit too, to have Joe Brady working with Phillip, even though it's the latter stages of Phil's career. The second option that I think is realistic for Carolina is Teddy Bridgewater. He is a lower risk than Cam. He is a cheaper, longer-term option at 27 years old. Also, you could argue. I probably wouldn't believe this argument, but you can make the argument that Teddy, when he has played, is more productive than Cam has been. Maybe aside from the 2015 season. There's enough sample size with both Teddy Bridgewater and Cam Newton that you could compare some of the significant quarterback figures when making arguments. And the facts are this. Teddy has a better passer rating than Cam by five or six points. Better completion percentage than Cam. Better win percentage than Cam. Last year, played five games. Five wins for the New Orleans Saints. And as I mentioned, he's 27. Cam's going to turn 31 in May. He is a cheaper, lower risk than Cam Newton. But out of those two, Rivers and Bridgewater, I'd prefer Rivers. Because I'm not convinced today Carolina is wanting to take on longer contracts. Bridgewater, he's not going to ask for another prove-it deal. He's not looking to sign a 1 or 2 year contract and be a bridge quarterback or a Bridgewater quarterback. Probably the better way to say it with him. No, he's going to want a 4 or 5 year deal. You only give Bridgewater that if you believe he's going to win a Super Bowl for you. I'm not convinced you can win a Super Bowl with Bridgewater at quarterback. Just look at the San Francisco 49ers. Is there a better team that you could put around a quarterback than what San Francisco had? They won all the important areas of that Super Bowl. They still lost. Why? They don't have Pat Mahomes. So if the goal is to win the Super Bowl, then why sign Teddy Bridgewater to 4 or 5 years? I'd prefer Rivers because that's a good guy to have in the building. I think it fits from a culture perspective. Matt Rhule's trying to install that. He's been given a lot of years, a lot of stability. He's secure in Carolina. Rivers, he allows you to collect the draft capital, trading away Cam Newton. 2 year contract, that isn't going to hurt you much, long term speaking. Also, he allows you to draft a young quarterback and develop him over the next few years. Even if it's not in this draft, if it's not Herbert, who's a first round draft pick, this is a pretty deep draft. You can get a quarterback past the first round. Carolina, they have a lot more needs than QB. If things don't work in the win column for the Panthers next year with Rivers at quarterback, well, next year's a pretty damn good class too. Trevor Lawrence going to be available. Justin Fields seems to be a really good prospect. And who knows, there might be another Joe Burrow-like athlete who stands out next year. We're talking about it draft time a year from now. 336-777-1600 is the phone number. Cam Newton, Phillip Rivers, Teddy Bridgewater. Who would you want playing quarterback for the Panthers this fall? 336-777-1600 if you want in on that topic. On Twitter, at SportsHubTriad. Also, just selfishly speaking, covering every single one of the Panthers games, it is the more interesting option, playing Phillip Rivers. Like, there aren't many quarterbacks I'm interested to hear what they have to say after a game. Phillip would be one of those guys. Also, NC State, I'd say next to North Carolina, has the most fans, the most alumni in the state of North Carolina, so it will be popular too. If Carolina is in rebuilding mode, and things aren't going to be great next year regardless if Phillip Rivers is a quarterback. Phillip's a guy who's going to get you into the stadium. He's somebody you could put on a poster other than Christian McCaffrey. So there are other ancillary reasons why it would make sense to sign Phillip Rivers. On Twitter, at SportsHubTriad, if you want to chime in that way. Robert Walsh is the producer of this show. You got Aaron Gabriel in the house as well. Sawyer Dillon is somewhere doing things allegedly. Rod Brindamore is going to join us in 20 minutes. The thing I want to talk to Rod about, the Stadium Series, I think represents growth of this state as a hockey market. Every single test that this state has faced, in a hockey sense, they've passed. Oh, can they be competitive? Can they be successful on the ice? I think two Stanley Cup appearances justify that in less than 23 years. Two more Eastern Conference Final appearances, including one last year. Longevity. It's not just all success. Anyone can get behind a winner. What's going to happen if you have nine straight years of not making the postseason? Carolina had that. They survived it. And this year, they've sold out 10 games at PNC Arena, the most they've sold out since the 2009 season, an Eastern Conference Finals team. And that year, they only sold out 10. So Carolina still has over a month to have more sellouts than that. There's a lot of momentum. They hosted the draft. They hosted the All-Star game. I was there in 2011. This is another step. Rob Brindamore has been there almost every step of the way. He's been a player, one of the best players the Hurricanes ever had. He's now a head coach. He was an assistant coach for a half dozen years or so as well. So I'm interested in his perspective on that, and he'll be here in a little over 15 minutes. Coming up, though, why I expect things to get nostalgic and maybe a little bit awkward in Winston-Salem tonight. This is The Drive.
We never want to hear you're disappointed with our programming.
Hell no.
Let's avoid that.
So please, keep it to yourself.
Just know that.
Oh, yeah.
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham.
Watch out now.
The 95 Wake Forest ACC champions will be honored at the Joel tonight. And boy, I expect things to get awkward and nostalgic fast. How many things are both nostalgic and awkward? Think about that for a second, boys. I'm not going to be in Winston-Salem tonight. Sawyer's going to be there instead. I'm going to be in Raleigh for NC State-Duke. I have some thoughts on that game in a minute. But Wake Forest, they have all ACC players being recognized tonight, in addition to Dave Odom, whose name's going to go into the rafters. That's happening before the game, so if you want to see Coach Odom being honored, get there before 7 o'clock. At halftime, they're going to honor the 95 team. As Dave Odom told us on yesterday's show, they're wanting to honor every player who has been honored in the rafters who's able to make it. I don't think Chris Paul's going to be a part of this. Tim Duncan is a hard maybe, but Odom said yesterday that he thinks that he's going to be here later on tonight. But just think of the all-ACC guys being recognized who went on to be NBA All-Stars. Josh Howard, he's going to be there. Muggsy Bogues, I'm sure, is going to be there. Tim Duncan, if he shows up. Then you juxtapose that with what is currently on Wake Forest's roster. I don't see one draft prospect on this team. I'm not saying that to be mean. I'm not a guy who crushes college kids. That's not what I'm about here. But Brandon Childress isn't going to be a NBA pro. Probably going to play basketball overseas if he wants to continue pursuing it. Chaundy Brown, if I had to guess, probably not, especially when you have injury concerns this early on. Olivier Saar shows flashes, not nearly enough, and also not enough success for me to think he would be a draft pick. So I think tonight is going to be a juxtaposition of what was versus what is. A beautiful pregame ceremony. That's what I'm expecting, with tremendous memories. Then it's going to be Georgia Tech playing this Wake Forest team. Then at halftime, they're going to build it back up. 95 team, bring them out. We're going to celebrate Randolph Childress, the crossover, Jeff McInnes, and we're going to see the Joel getting loud, as this is the 30th year anniversary of the Joel. Everybody's going to be getting hype in these videos. I just hope there's a lot of people in the stands to watch it. In the end, I hope the pull of Tim Duncan being there, maybe, and Dave Odom being honored, is enough to have a decent crowd at the Joel. But I'm not very optimistic on that. I'm not optimistic because if North Carolina, even bringing all the Tar Heel fans out, only packs that place two-thirds full? I don't think Georgia Tech on a Wednesday night with this Wake Forest team is going to bring out Deke fans in full force. I just don't think so. Especially if it's all going to be on television too. I hope I'm wrong. I hope I am. But that's the way I feel about it right now. Tonight, it's going to remind Wake Forest fans what the standard should be. And to anybody who thinks that I'm being unfair to Danny Manning, that I'm being harsh, that I'm being the sports talk show host calling for people's heads, that's not what I'm about. I'm not somebody that calls for people's jobs. I think this might be the only time we've done it, saying that Wake Forest or that a team would be better off with a head coaching change. I don't even think we did it with Ron Rivera, even though we said that's something that might be expected. So that's not what this show is. That's not what we're about here. However, I grew up in this state, and my service, what I do here on the radio, is tailored towards my audience, not towards the people at Wake Forest. It isn't my job to pump up schools, to pump up Wake Forest, NC State, Duke, North Carolina. It seems people conflate those ideas, and I completely understand it. You have your own lives with things that are complicated, more complicated than sports. You just go to this radio show because, hey, it's an escape and I like sports. I don't expect you to understand all the different intricacies. But I feel like in order to be sincere and genuine to the audience, I have to be honest when it comes to Danny Manning and Wake Forest. It's obvious that the Deacs aren't meeting the standard that was set by Dave Odom. The standard that was set by guys like Rodney Rogers, who we expect at the Joel tonight. Randolph Childress, Tim Duncan, Josh Howard, Skip Prosser, Chris Paul, heck, even Dino Gaudio's two or three seasons before things went down. Like, one NCAA tournament in 6 years for Danny? Two in the last 10 years? It's just not good enough. It isn't. And tonight's going to be a reminder of that. Here's what I find solace in, though. I know John Curry understands it. I know it. Not based on conversations I've had with him, but he's somebody who is a proud Demon Deacon. He's a guy who used to have tickets in the upper level watching that 95 team. He went to school here. He knows Wake Forest history very well. He is well connected in the college basketball world and knows he can bring in a quality head coach if he so chooses. That's what he did at Kansas State, bringing in a really good coach at K-State, replacing Frank Martin. Who was it? Bruce Weber? So I really feel like Wake Forest has a director of athletics who understands the state of things, understands what the standard should be because he has an appreciation of the history. He's also somebody who's great at fundraising as well. And if it takes a little bit of that to get to a buyout figure that's close to $10 million, I'm confident he can get the job done. Rod Brindamore, Carolina Hurricanes head coach, is going to join us in a little less than 10 minutes in response to me saying that I think Phillip Rivers should be Carolina's quarterback this year. That's a better alternative to Cam Newton. I got a text already saying, how fertile is Joe Burrow to think that that's the best comparison for him to Phillip? How many kids would there have to be for Joe Burrow for you to say that that might be a comp there, Robert?
At this stage in his career, maybe having a nice little seed family of 2 to 3 kids, I would say he would be on pace.
Right, okay. Any other awkward, nostalgic stages of life you think you could compare to tonight? Wake Forest honoring the 95 team while having a team that's not going to make the NCAA tournament for the third straight year?
Maybe like seeing your dad's ex-wife somewhere. Like, yeah, I remember you took me to museums, but I also remember y'all fighting in public. I don't know. Maybe something like that.
That sounded very close to the heart.
Oh, no, it wasn't me. I was just saying maybe.
Why'd you mention museum?
No, it wasn't me. I promise. I'm just going to go back over here.
All right. That sounds good. You got something, Aaron? 336-777-1600 is the phone number if you want to chime in. Like, what do you imagine the conversation's going to be among those guys who are draft picks in the NBA watching this Wake Forest team? Like, Josh Howard chopping it up with Muggsy Bogues, maybe Tim Duncan. They're looking at things saying, yeah, I remember playing Georgia Tech. And, man, I remember playing in this place. It was a little harder to get in. A little too comfy right now. A little too comfy getting into these seats. It's a little bit different than it was back when we were playing. Just a hair different than what we're used to seeing this time around. NC State also plays Duke later on tonight. I think the Wolfpack is going to be in position to beat the Blue Devils tonight.
We suck.
NC State, they do a good job defending big, so I'm not that concerned about Vernon Carey. NC State's been killed by perimeter shooting. That's been the issue. Derek Thornton going off the other night for BC. Jose Alvarado, Michael DeVoe from Georgia Tech. Ryan McMahon with those threes he went on a roll hitting at PNC Arena a few weeks ago. Duke, meanwhile, they struggle against dribble penetration. Markel Johnson, I think he'll have a bounce-back game. C.J. Bryce, he's NC State's best player. Very good at driving to the basket and finding holes near the foul line and at the elbow. Look at the guys who have had success against Duke. Trent Forrest, Cole Anthony, David Johnson. I was at the Stephen F. Austin game and saw a guard go off for 26. I think it's going to be close. But even though NC State has won four of the last six home games against the Blue Devils, I think it's going to be Duke winning a tight game tonight. Duke, they've won five ACC games by 30-plus, but they've also closed well, too. North Carolina, Boston College, Florida State, those are all examples where Duke had to be tough. And I think this Duke team is a little bit tougher, maybe a lot tougher, than NC State is. And plus, perimeter shootings hurt NC State. And while Duke isn't a great perimeter shooting team, Alex O'Connell, he's played very well the last three games, hitting important shots against North Carolina after seemingly being out of the rotation altogether. He hit the two most important shots against Florida State at home a couple nights later. I thought he was really good, especially when Zion walked into the building on Saturday against Notre Dame. Matthew Hurt, he's about 40% from three. Joey Baker, another one to watch for. So NC State, they'll have a shot to win tonight just as long as Hurt, Alex O'Connell, and Joey Baker don't go off. But if it's close, I just trust Duke a lot more to be tougher and to finish things out. I think they're going to win a close game tonight, and I'll be there to tell the tale. Fresh off a road win in Nashville, Hurricanes head coach Rod Brind'Amour joins the show. Next on The Drive.
No mercy, no pity, no fear.
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham.
In honor of Dave Odom, who was a guest on yesterday's show, and the 1995 Wake Forest championship team that's going to be recognized at the Joel tonight, I have a list of my top 10 things about the 1990s. We do a top 10 list every single week. I was a 90s baby, and I'm all about it. All about the 90s. And I think we should dive headfirst into this, because afterwards, I have a couple free agents that the Carolina Panthers need to pursue. A few free agents that I look at and say, that's a good fit for Matt Rhule and the Panthers. But let's get into the top 10. Oh, yeah! Woo! Top 10 things about the 90s! Number 10, my number 10 thing about the 90s, Saved by the Beltron.
Goodbye.
Do you have a favorite 90s TV show, Aaron?
Family Matters.
Robert.
oddly enough, same. I had the biggest crush on Laura Winslow ever.
It was all about Myra, bro.
I don't know.
Laura was jacked up. She didn't have to do Steve like that.
You're right.
For years,
number
she did Steve
nine!
Wrong.
My number nine thing about the 90s. Blockbuster Douglas. Yeah. Big upset that he's on the list. Blockbuster Douglas. One of my favorite things about the 90s. Where was that fight? Somewhere in Japan?
Tokyo.
Yeah. Happened like at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning. Everybody woke up. Wait, what happened? Number eight! My number eight thing about the 90s. Brandon Beanie Babies.
Nickelodeon!
If they're going to take all the Carolina Panthers along with them to Buffalo, I'm going to include him in my top 10 list. Then the rules. Number seven! My number seven thing about the 90s. The Denver Ford Broncos. Could you imagine if something like the OJ chase happened in 2020? Like, I don't want to think what the equivalent would be because I don't want to accuse anybody of a double murder. But that would be insane. Just crazy. It kind of would be, it's breaking news, kind of like when Kobe passed, we had the Pro Bowl going on, and it cut into the Pro Bowl. It cut into other programming. It infiltrated the Grammys. Yeah, one of the biggest things that's ever happened. Number six. My number six thing about the 90s. Super Mario Lemieux.
It's me, Mario.
Isn't that crazy how that one worked out? These are usually random.
Did you have that?
I did. It just ended up working out.
That's crazy. I love Super Mario, but I'll always be a Mario Kart and Mario Party guy more than anything else.
64 just revolutionized the whole 3D gaming thing. Before, it was like a tabletop stroller or scroller. And then once you had Mario 64, you had like a whole vivid world.
I always rock with Yoshi. I don't care what game it is. I don't play unless I'm Yoshi.
Even Smash Brothers, you're a Yoshi guy?
Yoshi. All the time. You can't kill him. He gets the double jump.
And he does get the double
then
jump.
Then you could turn into a shell anytime something gets scary. Number five! My number five thing about the 90s. Where's John Waldo?
Yeah, baby!
Austin Powers was the 90s?
Sadly enough, I think so. I think the first one was in the 90s.
Yeah, that checks out. Number four! My number four thing about the 90s. Fresh Prince, Fielder.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
I did not sleep with that woman. In fact, we were up all night.
Fresh Prince, Fielder. Making the cut. I'm going to move away from the awkwardness that you just threw on this segment. Number three! My number three thing about the 90s. Chris Macarena. Ugh, I hate that sound.
Blood curdling.
It's a terrible sound. Nobody wants to hear this sound. That if you play again, I would be really upset if you played. Ugh, just terrible. Number two. My number two thing about the 90s. Plaid Stevens.
Do a barrel roll.
Is Plaid in?
I think anything's in now if you can rock it the right way. I'm not going to be in here wearing Plaid, but maybe once it gets colder, like if you want to do the lumberjack look, I think it really depends.
Like if I went the lumberjack look tonight at Wake, wait, I'm not going to Wake, going to NC State Duke, would it work out?
No.
You need a beard and manly features.
Yeah, you don't look tough enough for lumberjack look.
Yeah, maybe like, yeah, I don't know.
Number one. My number one thing about the 90s. When Roy Meets World. I love that show. Mr. Feeney. Apparently, my brother used to hang out with the guy who played Sean on that show. Like, he was out in Los Angeles, and they were at a party. Hung out just two or three times.
What the?
And then he kind of learned his name, like, it was something strong. Like, I don't know what his first name what was. Something strong.
How did they greet each other?
Well, no, they were just hanging out, and then he recognized the guy's name. Wait a minute, where do I know you from? Yeah, way back in the day, I played Sean from Boy Meets World, and that was like my brother's favorite show.
Are you sure they didn't greet each other like,
what's that?
Are we going to do this the entire segment? Okay, the rest of the segment, we're going to do this. Things that didn't make the cut in the top 10 list. Among things that didn't make the cut on this list. Taking that AOL.
What's that?
The New York Nickelodeons.
What's that?
Taking the overalls. Doc Martens Broder. Rod Tidwell.
What's up?
Grunge Rodriguez.
What?
All right. Here are some free agents I think the Carolina Panthers should go after. Jordan Rodrigue going to be with us from the Athletic Carolinas at 5:30. I think I'd prefer Phillip Rivers at quarterback over Teddy Bridgewater. If you're going to move off Cam Newton, and I believe the Panthers are going to, the moment they learned that Luke Kuechly was surprisingly retired, I think that sealed the deal there. I think Phillip Rivers, he'd be a short-term contract guy. If you're rebuilding, you don't want long-term deals tying you down, especially at the quarterback spot. How about this one? This is one you'll like. Robbie Anderson.
Yeah.
Where'd Robbie Anderson go to school?
Temple.
Which means he played for who?
Scott. I don't remember that guy's name.
Matt Rhule.
There you go.
Who is the Carolina Panthers head coach.
Yeah.
That guy. So that would check out and make some sense. Robbie Anderson was asked about maybe reuniting with his college coach. He said, yeah, that might be a pretty cool thing to do. So it seems he's open to it. I don't think Robbie Anderson would be even the second best receiver on this team. I think DJ Moore, Curtis Samuel, you need a third option, and Robbie Anderson would be that. Maybe could be a second option if Curtis Samuel doesn't take another step. And another player to consider is this. One of the best college players. Oh, and thanks to Zach, by the way. It's Ryder Strong I'm talking about there, who played Sean from Boy Meets World. Or, excuse me, When Roy Meets World. Tyler Matakevich. He's a free agent. If you don't know who Tyler Matakevich is, another Temple guy, he's one of the best college linebackers I ever watched. And for Pittsburgh, he was one of the best special teams players in the entire league. What Matt Rhule is looking to do right now is build a culture. Is there anybody you can find, maybe available, who represents Matt Rhule's process and culture better than somebody who played for him at Temple? Might have been his best player at Temple? I don't think so. You bring that guy in, he understands Matt Rhule. He understands that he's going to be setting the culture that's going to give the Panthers a chance for success in the future. They lost Luke Kuechly. Shaq Thompson gets the big contract, so there's going to be a little bit of a rotation in that linebacking core. Matakevich, he could step in that spot. He will be a well-liked player from the fans. That's someone to look at. And I'll throw one more name out there. Greensboro's own Eric Ebron. You lose Greg Olsen. Both teams parting ways there. I think they want Ian Thomas to grab hold of an opportunity. This is the only reason why Eric Ebron might not be the best fit. Ian Thomas, he's been solid. Not great. Not Greg Olsen quality yet, but he's still very young. The tight end out of Indiana going into his third year. Carolina's going to want to develop that guy. But you can have another tight end that he could potentially learn from, and Ebron's that guy. He's had some issues in locker rooms. But a homecoming for him would make some sense. He could catch some passes. And Joe Brady, he's great when he's working with tight ends of quality. Thaddeus Moss being the perfect example from LSU. So those are names to consider Phillip Rivers, Robbie Anderson, Tyler Matakevich, and Eric Ebron as players of the Carolina Panthers may or should go after. Coming up, my prediction for Duke NC State tonight and the nostalgic night to come inside Joel Coliseum. This is a Wednesday Drive.
A much better show. The Drive with Josh Graham.
One of my favorite reoccurring bits we do from time to time is Food and Football with Jordan Rodrigue, Panthers beat reporter with the Athletic. Carolinas wrote a very interesting story a few days ago about Cam Newton's foot status, having the surgery on the Lisfranc in December, and apparently that being ahead of schedule, and he could be recovered from that foot and ready for football activities as soon as next month. So let's knock out the football and newsworthy portions first, Jordan, and appreciate your time as always. What's the most important piece of the Cam Newton information you learned?
Yeah, great question, Josh. I think that it's twofold. The first is that he is on schedule for what he wanted from this by having the surgery. When he had the surgery, it was a Lisfranc tightening procedure. Pretty simple described to me. I mean, there is no simple surgery, as we know, but it's described to me at the time by a few people as relatively simple to what it could have been, tightening the area around the Lisfranc joint and making sure that, he's rehabbing. At the time, he was pretty optimistic about being able to resume into some football activity by March and pass a physical. That looks like it will be the case, according to the people that I spoke to who do have direct knowledge of that. So that's good news for Cam. I think it offers clarity for the Panthers as this situation kind of unfolds. And I think, importantly, not just for the Panthers, but also importantly for Cam, it offers a little bit of clarity as to what, where he's going to be at ahead of free agency and ahead of the draft. The other thing is that I thought was really important is that he's been in the building on a weekly basis that I've been told. So to me, he's showing that he wants to be there. He's showing that he's not by any means going to let them kind of just like block him out or be blocked out himself. He's in the building. He's making the effort. So it seems to me like from his position, he's kind of making things clear to them about what he wants.
We heard your voice last week asking questions to David Tepper as he had a charity event and was pressed on Cam Newton's Radio Row comments at the Super Bowl in Miami, saying he absolutely expects to be back. And there are a couple things I found interesting about that story blowing up. He was asked about him being traded potentially, or if he's received any inquiries already, even though you can't talk about a player being traded. The rules don't say you can do that until the new league year starts next month. It would be tampering if David Tepper admitted that. I think it's a product, this becoming a big story, of owners speaking. Generally, you don't see many owners talking, not named Jerry Jones. And it's a product of Cam Newton being one of the more polarizing quarterbacks we've seen the last decade. Also, it was the middle of the week last week, and the Super Bowl was a week and a half removed. We needed something football to talk about. It was red meat. How newsworthy is someone who was standing right in front of David Tepper and hearing what he had to say, how newsworthy do you believe his comments to be?
Well, I don't believe his comments were newsworthy. I think that that's been the line the company has been following for, months now since he went on injured reserve the first time. And then, I kind of outlined in my piece that when he went on injured reserve, that kind of started, and when he was hurt, it kind of started this conversation about, will they try to move on from him? But it wasn't entertained as seriously as it was. It started to amplify when, Ron Rivera and the entire staff, other than Marty Herney, who drafted Cam, was out of the building. So I think that amplified things. But they've been saying the same thing about him. And, we're not making a decision until we know he's healthy. We're not making a decision. Is he healthy? We don't know yet. And so to me, that's just been the same message. I will say I understand the perspective of it appearing to be a little bit different, because in previous interviews with David Tepper, it's all been transcript. It's all been written down, kind of what he said. Well, now people saw, via various videos taken of him talking, people saw exactly how kind of noncommittal his comments were, and how PR shut them down very quickly, things like that. And so I think that that aroused a little bit of suspicion in people who are maybe like on the fence about all of this. And it certainly has increased the conversation around Pam, and kind of the main question is, well, why aren't the Panthers committing to him long term in the same way other teams with injured quarterbacks, the Steelers, the Lions, are committing to their quarterbacks? And to that, I would say you answered your own question. I mean, because they are clearly, by doing this, very much trying to figure out what their options are at the moment. And if they don't know yet, because they don't know whether he's healthy, you know, at least now they're optimistic that he will be. And so maybe they can start issuing a little bit more clarity moving forward.
It's Jordan Rodrigue, The Athletic Carolina. She's on Twitter, at Jordan Rodrigue. Now let's get to the food portion of the conversation. We were talking about the famous group Bone Thugs in Harmony changing their name to Boneless Thugs in Harmony. And apparently they're big Buffalo Wild Wing fans. I'm interested in your viewpoint from a wing-eating perspective. Do you prefer boned in or boneless?
I think that boneless wings are good when, you know, in their own right. But for me, I really, really like, I'm a flats person. So I really, really like eating a good wing from Moosehead out here. It's the best wings I've ever had. And there's this blackened seasoning called Uncle Donnie's that they put on them, and I'm a flats person all the way. So in that regard, if I could only get flats all the time, I would only, you know, I would compromise that. I would make sure that I'm not, you know, if trading off and no longer being able to eat boneless wings is the trade-off, then I would absolutely take that, because I'm a total flats girl.
You're getting a standing ovation. Is that the best place you've eaten wings? You've taken me there, and it was an adjustment at first, eating the first two wings or so, having the charred mm-hmm. wings at Moosehead in Charlotte. Are those the best wings you've had?
Yeah, those are absolutely. I mean, I've eaten wings in a lot of different cities, including Buffalo. I wish I could have eaten more types of wings. I guess we have to talk to Marcel about that one. But
you told us that you ate 22 wings or so in one sitting in Buffalo, I think.
23, yes. That was a good day. But yeah, I was that Moosehead's the best. I mean, that's just the absolute best wing of any place that I've been.
You're the absolute best when it comes to the Panthers coverage. It's good to hear your voice, and I'm sure we'll be catching up sometime soon. Thanks for doing this, Jordan.
Thanks, Josh. Appreciate you, man. Take care.
Yep, that's Jordan Rodrigue. She's on Twitter, at Jordan Rodrigue. I'm not sure if you've heard yet, Robert, but Tim Duncan is at Joel Coliseum. And his outfit is getting reaction. I was on record saying that Timmy D's fashion had improved after he retired. He's looked fine on the San Antonio Spurs bench next to Greg Popovich. During either a Tony Parker or Manu Ginobili ceremony where they were being honored, he had this cool t-shirt with a blazer and a nice hairdo. I don't really know what he's doing with this hairdo right now. At the Joel, there's pictures here. He has what looks like a regular undershirt, white undershirt he's wearing, with just a Wake Forest old school letter jacket on top. And how would you describe this hairdo to somebody who doesn't have the visual, Robert?
I also do not have the visual. I'm trying to find this picture as
Aaron, how would you describe it?
Timmy D? Timmy D's rocking like the, looks like an asymmetrical dreadlock bob.
Is it the top dreadlock where they do it all in
yeah,
one?
Yeah, the sides are shaved, but it's kind of swooping to the left or the right.
Okay, so it's like business at the same time as pleasure.
I'm so glad he's back. That's awesome. Having Timmy D in the building. Dave Odom, he told us yesterday that he believed Tim Duncan was going to be able to make it All-Star Weekend. I don't think you picked this Georgia Tech game to honor the 95 team if you didn't think Tim Duncan would be there. Right? Like it's the All-Star Week. When's the next time Oklahoma City plays? Do we know for sure Chris Paul's not going to be there? I think we would know if CP3 was going to be in the house. Oklahoma City, they've been having a nice year. They play
Friday.
Friday, so same night as the Spurs. So theoretically,
he could have made it.
Yeah. But he wasn't on the 95 team.
Excuses.
They're honoring the other players that have banners. Honoring Josh Howard. They're honoring, I think, Muggsy Bogues. They're going to honor, too. Rodney Rogers. And honor a lot of great players that Dave Odom coached and Dave Odom didn't coach. So it would be neat if you have CP3 and Tim Duncan together. But I'm not getting greedy. It's cool that Tim Duncan is in Winston-Salem right now.
What? Tim Duncan's at Winston-Salem?
He is!
I really just wanted to do that again.
I know. NC State, they are the ACC's last realistic shot at a fifth NCAA tournament team, I think. And they don't necessarily need to win tonight, but they have to beat Florida State or Duke to have a chance. They need one more good win. They're 3-4 in quad one wins. They have Duke in Durham, Florida State Saturday in PNC Arena. So you have Duke tonight, FSU, Duke in Durham, two out of the three being at home. You got to win one of those three and then win two out of three against North Carolina, Pitt, and Wake, two out of those three being at home. Win the first game in Greensboro that you play, and that'll have NC State at 20 wins. And I don't think they're going to turn down this year a 20-win ACC team with four quad one wins. I don't think that's going to happen. So tonight's a good opportunity because NC State has beaten Duke four of its last six times at PNC Arena. Syracuse needs pretty much a miracle. They play at Louisville tonight. Louisville hasn't played well the last two games. But even if they beat the Cardinals tonight, they need to win four of their next five at least. Three of those games are on the road. Even then, they're at 19 regular season wins, so they'll have to do more damage in the NCAA tournament, the ACC tournament. Notre Dame's toast, 1-6 quad one games. If five teams make the tournament, and it's not even a given that Virginia's going to make it at this point, they're very much on the bubble, according to Joe Lenardi. Five NCAA teams would salvage a down year for the ACC, because I would still take the top three teams the ACC has versus anybody else's top three. Give me Florida State, Louisville, and Duke against anybody else. I know Kansas is getting set to face Baylor in a top three showdown. Kansas third rank, Baylor number one on Saturday. But who's the next best team in the Big 12? West Virginia is ranked 17th. If that's your best three, I'm still going to take Duke, Louisville, and I'm going to take Florida State. The Big Ten. Oh, they might get 10 teams this year. Oh, really? 10 teams. That's cool. Who's your best team? Maryland? Yeah, I'll take Duke over Maryland. And I'll take Louisville over Maryland. I might take Florida State. And no, I'll take Maryland over Florida State. But who's next? Penn State? You're going to talk me into Penn State over Leonard Hamilton's team? Get out of town with that. Then after that, Iowa? Those are the three best Big Ten teams. Penn State, Maryland, Iowa. Pass. Big East, Nova, Creighton, Seton Hall. I'd take Duke, Florida State, and Louisville over those three. I just would. So I think there's a chance for everything to be salvaged here. NC State, I don't quite think they're going to win tonight. I think it's going to be a close game. Spread 6.5. That sounds about right. I think Duke's a little bit better at closing games, but I think it's going to be a really good one at PNC Arena. Tough choice tonight. If you had the option, NC State, Duke, or Georgia Tech, Wake Forest, Timmy D in the house, they're honoring the 95 team, what would you choose?
No disrespect to Tim Duncan, but I'd probably still pick Duke, NC State.
I'd probably head to the Joel. That was good times.
There is more convenience going to the Joel. But yeah, we're sending Sawyer Dillon there. I'm going to Raleigh, so I got the drive in front of me.
So you need to go ahead and get out of here.
Oh, no. We're not done yet. We got take it to the house to do. Speaking of which, Robert, what do we got?
I found a loophole that's going to make me the largest Guinness World Book of Record holder of all time.
I'm fascinated by this. We take it to the house next.